My favorite line in your Patreon article was, Jason snatched defeat from the jaws of victory with one of the most classic misplays of our friendship.
It was very on brand.
The way you wrote that, I LOL'd. I actually laughed.
That's a nice compliment. I appreciate that our mic humor can make it into written form.
And yeah, I was miles ahead in that game. Miles. I was crushing you guys in King of Tokyo.
Read the cards.
And then I didn't read the cards. And I sat in a strategy that was, you could only lose.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we are miles ahead, but don't read our opponent's cards. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason, and I took that personally. Where are we?
It's art day. I'm not going to lie. I had a little bit of that sense. You know that dream where you like wake up and you don't have all the things that you need and you're horribly unprepared for the test?
Yes, absolutely.
That was my experience coming into your house tonight.
We drew. We made art.
We made something.
Not for our game. Mostly we're doing this as a recruitment tool, but we made art today. We drew. We sat down and we drew.
A D6 on a beach.
I asked Mark, I said, Mark, what should we draw? We need to draw something. We'll post it to Instagram. And if you're listening right now, you can go to Instagram and you can look at our art. As Mark is telling you, we drew D6 on a beach. How did you come up with that?
Well, you rejected my idea of drawing hands.
And pineapples.
And pineapples. And you did say you wanted to draw something about a board game. So we needed something with a little more detail to fill out our activity to begin the evening. So I thought, why not put it in a nice little beach, a little coconut drink, lawn chair.
We gave ourselves 5 minutes each to draw D6 on a beach. You and I drew. My partner also drew because we thought it would be fun to have somebody who is above our skill level, just as like a benchmark. If you want to take a look at these, and you should, head over to Instagram at The Misplay, but brace yourself. You may want to use those glasses from the solar eclipse so you don't hurt your eyes looking at these.
We did draw the sun in our pictures.
What are the similarities between our drawings? The die is central, it's focused, even though your tree is technically bigger than your die, as it should be.
But it's in the foreground, foreground, background.
Ooh, yeah. Art terms.
We sure are good at talking about stuff.
Well, I did a thing on my umbrella where I smudge the lines. I've seen my students do it.
Clever. We both had a sun. Your sun looks more like sunset. Mine looks like the classic sun high overhead.
We both have. I thought it was interesting that we both had the dice aligned the same way and possibly correct.
I think mine's backwards. I mean, compared to each other's, ours are backwards, right?
Reflection?
Yeah.
More art terms.
We did not allow ourselves any live reference. So if the drawings of the dice are wrong, it's not our fault.
Now, we also did something that we're going to talk about later. We also took about a half second. We asked AI art to do the same thing, to draw a six-sided die on a beach. And we're going to talk more about AI later, but the result was really interesting. I mean, visually, like it's exactly what I wanted to do. I just didn't know how to do that.
Actually, I think it was a miss because we didn't do a good job with our defining terms. And I don't want to go too much into it because the punchline of all of this is part of the reason why we're not going to use AI art. But the quality of this drawing or this piece is so far beyond what we could do. And there's not a world where we in good conscience can be like, here's our artwork.
Right.
But we'll go into some of the more details a little bit later.
Before we start, this week's episode is brought to you by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is a YouTube channel at Board Game Casual Channel, if you're searching on YouTube. They are a YouTube channel that welcomes people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, unboxing, tips for accessories, and more.
You know, now that I've subscribed to the channel and have had a little bit more time to explore, there seems to be an emerging series that I really hope continues that is, if you like this game, here's another game you can play. As someone who is trying to create a board game, but also does not have a wide repertoire of games that I've played, I need the guidance and the reference of, okay, here's, I think one of the examples is Carcassonne. Here's Carcassonne. If you've played Carcassonne and enjoyed it, here's a different game that you could play. For me, that would be valuable because I just haven't played that many games. Getting recommendations of someone that I trust and believe in their assessment of games would make it easier for me to dig in and find games to play more quickly so that I can play, learn, and study.
What was the game to play in replace of Carcassonne? because my wife loves Carcassonne, but I don't. So I'd love to try something that is similar.
Cascadia is the recommendation.
Nice. We'll have to try. So you can check out Board Game Casual on YouTube by searching Board Game Casual. What are we working on?
Jason, let me take you back to a time before we were thinking about designing our own game. We were playing a lot of Eternal.
Yes, I know where you're going.
And in this fabled time, you told me, the pictures don't matter, the art doesn't matter, I would play with black and white with no pictures and only text.
Yes, I did.
Have you come around on that statement at all?
A fair bit from where I was. Now that we're going down, you know, this road where we're going to create our own board game, we have to have art, you know? I cannot put a game out with just black and white text, and games like that exist. You know, I'm thinking of something that I play with my students in the classroom called We Didn't Play Test This At All. There's no art, just text. You could, but I think for what we want to create something more compelling, something that's more interesting, that's more attractive for people. So I've come around a little bit. You know, I did say it once on Instagram recently. There's this game that I really like being developed by somebody. And I said, this is the first game I might buy because of the art. That's the only time I've ever said it. Because to me, still, it's not as important as it is to other people. How important is art to you?
I feel like I've come a pretty long way from enjoying the art in the games that I have played a lot of. I am a fan of the art in Magic the Gathering. I'm a fan of the way that the art was expressed for Eternal cards. But now when I look at a game, I'm like, oh, there is a, I don't want to call it a tangible quality because that's more about the components, but there is an immersive quality to the art in the games that I have played recently. And it was one of the things I think I mentioned in the Patreon article, like the way that King of Tokyo was designed, like having the board, having the design of the characters. I think the first thing I said about that game was like, oh, I really like the alien character. Like, it's cute. It was well designed. Like, it was neat. And I was a little bit bummed that I didn't get to be that one, but I was okay with being Eldritch Horror instead.
I don't even know what those characters were.
But you didn't look at them. You're just like, I need to be King Kong, because you're like, I want to be the king.
I did.
So like your decision was also influenced by the art of the game.
I didn't know it was King Kong though.
But I mean, that's what it was referencing.
Sure. Now, I asked this question to ChatGPT. I said, put it between 1 and 10. How important is art in a board game? And it was actually really funny because at first it wouldn't say. It was like, it's not really what I, you know, can do. But then I pressed it and it said between a 7 and an 8. That's how important art is. It said it's highly important, but not necessarily the sole determining factor in a game's success. But 1 through 10, art is somewhere between 7 and an 8. So it's important. Now, we don't know our game yet.
True.
Supermarket Game, MMA Gauntlet, Star-Crossed Realms. We don't know what it is yet, but we wanted to talk about art today. You had said this. You had said that this is the monster that is looming overhead for different reasons. One of those reasons is
cost.
Right.
The homework you gave me, the reading for the Stonemaier Games, a guide to board game illustration article that you sent, gave me the sweats. Art is very expensive.
It is. Now, the pie in the sky for me has always been that we're able to bring somebody into the partnership to do art, which I know it's a weird way to say work for free for now. But for me, that has been the hope, that we'd be able to find somebody who is invested in the project and wants to create something with us. Pie in the sky, though.
Where that kind of leaves us then, right, is we kind of have these three avenues that are potentially viable depending on your aesthetics and your values and the financial constraints that you're under. The first one being pie in the sky dream, bring someone to the partnership that wants to do the art for the love of the game.
Right. Pros?
We'd have someone invested in the game.
Yep.
We would have more back and forth between the design team to develop the style and the vibe of the art. And hopefully, you know, like maybe we get somebody who also wants to work on playtesting, designing cards, thinking about more aspects of the game, because we are looking to have a more robust team once we settle on what the game will be. Hate to say it, but like would be less expensive if we got somebody who was like, yes, I want to jump on and be a part of this like small thing without compensation. Like, that is the dream world for us, because there will be a reality where we have to face the fundraising monster, the fundraising thing, the fundraising Eldritch Horror.
I feel like if we get there, we're fine.
On the game or on
fundraising?
Oh,
I think if we can create what we're setting out to create.
Sure.
But that's just my unjustifiable confidence. Cons of bringing somebody in.
Compensation for labor is unknown at best, which I have pretty strong feelings about. Like, I don't mind doing this for like the love of the game, because my motives are different than just game design as career kind of thing.
Right.
And the other piece, like recruiting someone to that cause will take a lot of time. Like, the elevator pitch for the show sounds great. The elevator pitch of, hey, here's this game that we're designing, want to come make all the art for free? It's like 600 hours of labor. Not excellent.
No, you gotta change that elevator pitch.
Hit me.
We're throwing in boba. That's our thing.
That definitely sweetens the pot.
Yeah, it does.
All the boba you can drink.
Not all. You have to set a limit.
We have a budget after all.
We do.
Option two.
Outsource. Pay someone else to do the... Pay someone or a team of people to do the art for us.
How does 50 different Fiverr drawings sound to you, Jason?
Like a lot of work. I have frequently had things created for us for the misplay for a while through Fiverr. So a lot of like little things we've done along the way over the last few years, I've had people do on Fiverr. It's fine. One-offs is a completely perfect thing to do on Fiverr. I'm sure there's plenty of people that do board game art on Fiverr. As far as cost, that would range. That would fluctuate. There's going to be people on there that are super professional and are going to charge what they're worth. And then there's going to be, you know, random people who do it and who are great at it that charge a lot less. How do I know they're not using AI art? I don't even know.
That's a really important consideration I hadn't thought of yet.
Let's go through the pros though. What do you think the pros of finding somebody, whether it's Fiverr or somewhere else?
First, I think it's the easiest way to establish a really clear budget for what we're going to set out to do. It will help set our fundraising goals once we have that as part of our production plan.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number. There's absolutely a number that we could be in a position to pay for art. We could afford not some of the things that we've seen where, you know, it could cost up to and over 10 grand. Like that is not a position we're in.
Nope.
There is a set amount somewhere where we could say, yeah, we could do this. We'd also get to choose an artist that fits kind of like our aesthetic.
Yeah, it would be a lot of shopping, but that would be one of the other real advantages. Once we set the budget number, then you go through and you find the artist that can work in that budget. And then you get to choose the artist, the style, the work that seems to fit the game best or fits our stylistic needs within the budget that we establish. The other thing about it, it's the lowest effort option for us.
Yes.
There's a lot going on with the show. You're doing a lot of like administrative back end. You're doing a lot of strategic planning, long-term design, making connections, like project managing. I'm working on a lot of the marketing things. I'm writing articles. I'm working on games. I'm going to be learning Tabletop Simulator. There's a lot going on and we're a small team right now. And so the benefit of setting a number within our budget and having somebody come and do the art for us eventually would take a significant load off our plate.
Cons.
Likely to be quite expensive. Also, like choosing someone blind, like you mentioned the thing about Fiverr and are they using AI or not? I think it will mean that the vetting process for finding an artist would be pretty intense to make sure that we're finding somebody that fits what we need, fits the values that we're trying to put forward. And it would just be a longer process to find somebody.
And there's a lot of places to look, even just in some of the Discords that I'm in locally. There's a lot of people that are creating art and there are a whole host of other websites that you can use to try to find somebody. While we say it is a low effort option, there is still quite a bit of work of trying to find somebody that, you know, matches with us.
I agree. I think it puts a lot of the work up front when we decide it's time to get an artist. And like you said, kind of navigating those complexities. The Stonemaier Games article did a really nice job of outlining you have to choose what platforms you're going to vet from. You get to choose the range of quality. You look at the price range that you're working with. You can look within your personal network. Whittling down the number of options of where you're going to look will also be a lot of upfront time cost.
How come you and I aren't doing the art?
Let's talk about that.
Yes.
Describe your picture to me, please.
D6 on a beach.
Go on.
In the center of the page is a cube with the dye markings on it. I have an umbrella in the sand. Then I have a towel on the beach, which looking at now looks like a door. I got a book a little buried in the sand. I got a shovel. Now, I did not know how to differentiate sand and water, so it just looks the same.
Everything's just floating in water from my perspective.
Right. And then my sun's at an angle.
I actually think the sunset is one of the highlights.
That's like, just not good.
The line work on the cube is really nice. You know, it's not like perfect cube, but I do think the way that you have your sun set up makes for a nice sunset. Like I can envision the sun setting behind the water like I was at Ocean Beach.
Okay. The highlight for me though is you notice the shading here on the umbrella?
Oh, is that an umbrella? I thought it was a mushroom.
Yes, it's an umbrella. This is something I've seen my students do when you rub your finger on the pencil.
It is a dirty umbrella now.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Is it?
I mean, now that you tell me it's an umbrella, I can kind of see the umbrella features.
Describe your drawing, Mr. Monet.
Listen, we led with the strong foot.
I don't believe that's true. I don't believe that's true. I think yours is of equal value.
You're being really nice. I have a palm tree off in the right side of the background. You can see.
Oh, I thought that was a giant hand.
Oh, yeah.
With a bracelet on.
Oh,
see that
I see
now?
It. Yeah. I can see it. I'm going to go with my palm tree was struck by lightning.
Okay.
There's a sun off in the top right hand corner.
Lots of great rays coming off that.
Just the little strands of hair. I have my dye in the foreground, just like you.
I noticed we both did a towel. Yours is that a towel or is that a chair?
No, mine's a lawn chair. The dye rolled off it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I do wish I'd given my dye a drink to hold. Mine is on a little mound of sand, so you can see like little speckles of sand.
An island, one might say.
I'm an island all by myself. I've got some really poorly drawn water. Another one of those things where I was like, I have exactly what I want in my head and just could not.
Wait, that's water in the background?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was like other islands or land in the distance.
No, it's water.
These are...
Those are waves.
Those are waves. Okay.
They look like the clouds in the air, except they're not connected.
I mean, you only had 5 minutes. Could you have done better with 10?
No.
No, me either.
It was good that we did it short. I needed to not prolong that agony.
We did think it would be interesting to have a third person draw with us. So my partner drew with us as well. And that picture's on Instagram as well. This is Monica's. This is much better than ours.
Oh, by far.
Factors. And so one of the things we're trying to demonstrate is we don't have any talent for this. I mean, none. You are great at a lot of things, Mark. Dance fighting, music, giving me compliments.
You're saying a lot of really nice things. I appreciate that.
See, we cannot draw. I really like this.
I also really like it. Monica did a version of the anthropomorphized D6 where it's holding its little martini glass or tropical drink.
Yeah, it's great.
Sitting by its towel in the background.
We all had the towel. That was better drawn, better perspective. The perspective on this is so much better.
Monica's palm tree also looks like a palm tree. Monica's palm tree is the palm tree that I saw in my head that I couldn't put on paper.
That is one that if we were allowed to look at a palm tree, I could draw that. It would take me time, but I could draw that. Still not as good as her just freehand, no visual, but I could come close to that. But without that picture in front of me, no idea. Mine would have looked like yours.
Monica also went with the line work for the sand, which was really nice.
The only thing that Monica said she really struggled with was getting the water to look right.
Oh, see, I think I see more water. And what's missing to me is a little bit more texture for sand.
I can't find any fault with it. When you think about where ours are.
To be fair, we shouldn't be throwing the stones that we couldn't draw.
No. So in doing this, our point was to just poke some fun at ourselves and put it out there that, hey, this isn't our forte. This isn't something we're very good at.
So we need to choose one of the other options that we've discussed for how we're going to make the art for our game.
Right.
The last option, the monster we need to smash, AI art. We already said we're not going to use it in our game.
That's correct. But we should talk about it. We should explain why.
I think it's important to separate out. I think there's some really cool, engaging, philosophical, and aesthetic discussions that can be had about AI art. Those are not the reasons why we're not using AI art. The reasons we're not going to use AI art largely fall around labor issues, ownership, and consent of the artists that the networks are trained on.
Right.
There are kind of like three main issues that I saw in my cursory reading about how AI art is damaging to human artists who have trained and spent time and invest energy in their learning and their development and their practice of the craft. The first issue is copyright laws. The AI programs, the neural networks that are trained on the images that are accessible on the internet, whether they are privately owned or open source or wherever those images are gathered from, often under the copyright of the artist who created them. And AI art essentially like skirts the copyright laws that would protect the artist's intellectual property. So that's piece one. There was a cool article that I found that summarized a lot of these points really nicely. The second part was AI art is actively taking away jobs from humans. There was an example in one of the articles where there was a children's book that was written over a weekend, and all 13 pages of the drawing were done by one of these AI generating programs and could have gone to a person who could have illustrated the book and, you know, made their rent or something that month. So this like human employment and taking money from artists is kind of point number two. And the last one is copyright law adjacent is a question of ownership of AI art. There's a great passage in the article. Traditionally, the creator of a piece had the right to reproduce, distribute, display, or create derivative works based on the original. They could grant or deny these rights to others, something that has been ripped away by the databases feeding and teaching these AIs. the legal questions around ownership of AI art make it really hard to compete for the ownership for artists of their property. They should have the option to decide whether or not their art can be used in this way. And the fact that they don't is one of the problems with allowing this type of AI training.
I mean, those are three well-explained reasons. I think that they make sense. Now, as somebody who is a classroom teacher, I use AI, specifically ChatGPT, a lot in what I do. My students don't use it as writers, but I'm really close to getting approval for using Khan Amigo, which is a math tutor, AI math tutor for students, that it won't tell you the answer. You can't be like, hey, tell me what this fraction divided by this fraction is. It's going to say, oh, what do you know about fractions? In the same way you and I would if we're one-on-one tutoring a student. I think there are a lot of really good applications for AI. I think for the most part, people are not ready for it. The economy is not ready for it. I think in 100 years, if we were doing this, Mark, I don't think there's any question we use AI. I think a lot of those type of jobs and professions are going to shift. Not to say that there's not going to be artists. That's crazy. I think there's always going to be. But I think for commercial use, I think it's going to be very widespread.
I think that's true. And you're already seeing it. But playing along with your 100 years from now, I think there is a window of opportunity that has been missed that we as a global society will be playing catch up with for the next 100 years because we didn't prepare to answer these questions early enough. It's like you're doing your homework too late. But I do think like the current discourse around AI usage and the regulation that either needs to come or hasn't come or will come, the way that it becomes regulated to protect the interests of people who want to make art their livelihood, the discussions now will shape what your 100 years future looks like.
That's a good argument. Either way, I think the number one reason we don't use AI art is because our target audience, the people that we are going to be creating board games for, are largely and strongly opposed to it.
And I like to think that they are opposed to it on the grounds of some of these labor-related issues. At least in the spaces that I've read, that seems to be the argument.
So we are making a concerted effort not to use AI art.
We want to give somebody the opportunity to be paid for their labor.
But not a lot. just a little.
We have a budget. Title of the show, we have a budget.
What's next?
Well, last time we talked about dating game and how we're going to put together a prototype to play. Peter and I are hard at work putting together cards, rules, assembly, discussing theme and other aspects to put that skeleton together. There's a little bit of a problem though. When we did Supermarket Game and MMA Gauntlet, we made our prototypes and we sat down in your basement and playtested. Peter lives on the other side of the country. If he and I are going to playtest a little bit to check before we roll out a larger playtest to the rest of the team, we're going to need to find some way to playtest online. And I remember another story back once upon a time, Jason said, Mark, at some point, you're going to have to get a tabletop simulator subscription. You're going to have to figure out how to use it and you're going to have to be best friends with it. So I think it's time.
I'm really smart. What is Tabletop Simulator?
Tabletop Simulator is an online platform. They sell themselves as a sandbox, but you can design game pieces, you can bring in games, and you can import your own assets. You have an ability to make public, you can make private, but it gives you the tools that you need to create your board game, card game in a digital space that you can actively playtest.
And the more you get into the board game design space, whether that is BGG, Reddit, Discords, there are so many people that are working within Tabletop Simulator for playtesting and for showing off their game and for figuring out what works and what doesn't work. It's universally one of the best tools that you can use as a game designer to test your game. And because you and I are here in California, Peter is in North Carolina, and we have members of the Misplay kind of scattered throughout the US, it's going to be useful. Even if we are just spending time playing other people's games for the next week, that is like a useful thing to start doing, to start seeing what it is we can do, because we know about Tabletop Simulator, but we haven't played anything on there yet. So to start seeing other games and how it works, we can start thinking about the things that we're going to need to create and how we're going to upload them and insert them into the game. We have no idea how to do that yet. There's a way. Do we need another program to do that? What can we start creating our cards in so that when we're ready to go to Tabletop Simulator, there's kind of a streamlined upload?
And so that's going to be part of the process. It's time to start figuring out the learning curve for all of those aspects of what we need in order to put the game into Tabletop Simulator, learning how to actually put the things into Tabletop Simulator, and just starting to navigate how to use it so that we can be efficient once we need to really start moving into the playtest and iterative cycles for the game.
And I love that you feel like you're getting to a place that you're like, we might be close to doing that.
I think it's going to be cool. The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjos, Brian, Bins. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our FAQ in Discord. It's going to be close. We're going to be short.
We got to, where do we want to add kind of a whole section after that? We could cut out where I put it. I'm talking to editing Mark. And so right now I could do that setup again where it's like, why are we not using us? Right. So editing Mark, take out anything where we talked about, you know, what the art was. I will do the lead in now about why we're not going to do us, why we're not an option. There was a point earlier in the episode where I was like, why not us?
You're giving me quite the puzzle for my first edit in a long time.
No, it's easy.
You say that as somebody who's been editing for shows.